Welcome back to the show. There's no telling where we'll go. So come and share a laugh on the Imp and Skiz podcast.
Well, Skiz, I think by now most people know that when we're sitting on the couch with headphones on, that means we have a guest. Also, I'm pretty sure the title and thumbnail of the episode
that usually
probably,
gives a dead giveaway.
Probably gave it away as well. But we have the pleasure, nay, the privilege of being joined by the one, the only Azuma Void today. Welcome, Azuma.
Yes.
Hi, guys. Hi, guys. So so pleased to be here. As I was saying just a moment ago, I'm a fan, and I got so excited when you guys invited me to be on. So
we're so glad you can make it. You know, I know it. You don't typically show your face on the interwebs.
I know. So I know. It's a bit of a problem, right?
Not a problem at all. We got a little creative.
Not at all.
And what we decided to do for this is basically your avatar that speaks in Discord when it lights up. We've got you on the wall.
Yeah.
Next to us. I just covered you up with my head. We got you on the wall next to us, so people can at least see when you're talking. But you're basically you're just in our ears in the. We were gonna act like he was actually in the room behind the camera. We blew it.
Yeah, we were gonna make a little joke that you were behind the camera, not willing to come in front of it, and just we were talking to talk to the corner of the room like you were here the whole time. But we decided.
Yeah, you put a little bit of reverb on my voice, you know, make it feel authentic.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, what we like to do when we have a new guest on the show is not make any assumptions that our entire audience knows about you, who you are, what you do on the interweb. So if you could just give us a quick introduction, let everybody know who you are.
Here we go. Well, I'm a part of the Hermitcraft group, of course. I'm a Minecraft YouTuber. I've been playing Minecraft for like 12 years now. So I've been making tutorials alongside Hermitcraft episodes and doing the snapshot coverage. Back in the day, I did myth busting. So I'm supposed to be quite knowledgeable about Minecraft, but the thing is, it's such a huge game now with so many details that you ask me something and I'll be like, I can't really remember. You know, my main thing is Minecraft, and then I've got a few other things that I do around that as well.
Yeah, and definitely want to get into some of those other things. In fact, one of those other things I think you're alluding to is the origin of your name, Azuma, because anybody that hears the name Azuma, right, might be like, what is that? Where did that come from? Can you give the background of how you came about with the name Azuma?
Yeah, it's just a made up name. And I think it was about 2009, maybe 2010. I think it might have started with the PlayStation 3, but basically I needed an online name. And I'm from the age of the internet where you just made up names when you went online, right? Onto little websites and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is sort of like pre-Facebook. I think MySpace was when people started to use their own names online a bit more.
Mm.
But anyway, I'm used to making up an avatar name. So what am I going to do? I love music. So I look at the word, I flip it around, change the C to an X, and it's like halfway there. Put an A on the end. Aha. It looks like you would say a sumo. Mm-hmm. So I went with that. When I signed up to YouTube, though, the name was taken, and I just happened to be listening to a band called Void Through Materialism, and then I went, I'll just take the word void, put it on the end, Azuma Void. There was no intention, there was no foresight for what that could mean to a lot of people in any day, right? So that's why I have a really weird YouTube name, I guess.
There you go. Yeah, you mentioned music a couple times. We'll get into that and how music has been a big part of your life. Probably later in the podcast. But we did want to start things off with the biggest question I think we have whenever we have a content creator on the podcast is, how did they get started? Like, what got you into this world of being a Minecraft YouTuber? You know, what made you hit record on your first video and publish it on YouTube?
Yeah, and when did you start to see that this had a promising future and it could be an actual reality? Like, I think that the amount of people in the world who have decided to pull the trigger on this life and just sort of became a reality overnight, that number is probably very, very close to zero. So the people who have pulled it off, they're somewhere in that journey. You start to realize this is not only something I like to do, it's not only something I'm good at, but this is actually starting to become a bit of a reality. So, like, I'd be curious to hear X bring us through that journey and probably had a lot of doubts and just kind of stayed the course. And I'm curious. It fascinates me. So to walk us through that journey.
Okay. I think it starts a fair bit before just, you know, hey, why did I make that first video? It really, I think it all stems from being at a low point in life and kind of having this thought one day that, like, it felt so low that the only way was up. And I started to change my attitude towards a lot of things in my life. And I felt like I needed to make something of myself somewhere. And having such a like deep passion for music, I decided, I got to stop picking up the guitar and messing around on it. Like, why don't I take this seriously? Because I used to write songs, right? Just hanging out with my friends and stuff. And I wanted to take that seriously. So I developed this pattern of, like putting time into it and working towards something and making these songs become a reality, learning how to mix, learning how to record. And that shift in mindset, when I found the game Minecraft and I saw people were creating content with it online, it sort of gave me the idea that I could do this too, because I just learned how to apply myself to something. Whereas before doing any of that, I'd never applied myself to anything really before. So this whole Minecraft thing is kicking up, and I was watching tutorials, and people would do stuff like record in the dark, and I don't know, you start a video and they tell you about like why they haven't uploaded in a couple of weeks, and it's like I clicked on this because it said slime farm tutorial or whatever, so I felt like there was room there to come in and do this, and so the first videos that I made were quite to the point. They were tutorials, they were laid out with sections. I didn't talk yet. But if you clicked on that video, you got exactly what you wanted, basically. So I actually had a very fortunate start of basically hitting the ground running, because not only did I put those videos up online, I also went and like posted them in various forums that I was already active in, which is something you can't really do today, but back then, I think things were more innocent and no one thought of sharing videos of like, oh, you want to be a big YouTuber or anything. Like, I didn't even want to be a big YouTuber. I was just like, well, I've made this tutorial, so why don't I share it with people? So I hit the ground running, and the first video, I think it got like 1,000 views in a few days, which is huge back
Wow,
then. Like, I
that
couldn't
is
believe
huge.
it. Yeah. YouTube's sending you all these emails every time someone subscribes as well. So immediately, I was into it, but no idea it could be a career. No, I wasn't thinking about it into the future. It was just like, this is fun, I'll keep doing it. And then at some point, I started talking, and then you started connecting with other people in the community, and it started to get a little bit more serious. And then the point where I think it started to become an idea that you could do this for a job or whatever, or it could be something big in the future, was probably joining Hermitcraft around that kind of time. It really started to feel like you were a part of something special. And this is when Minecraft was going on, and Minecraft was huge. So joining Hermitcraft was like, oh my God, an opportunity to do that really cool thing where creators come together and play. And I think it was like about 6 to 9 months of being on Hermitcraft that things changed with my employment in a really bad way. And I started to make money from doing it. And that's when I quit my job and thought, okay, I'm gonna give this a try. So I didn't really have any like big moment of seeing a career or a future. It just kind of like happened. It just sort of rolled out, and one thing led to the next. But I'd say it was all driven by that shift in attitude about wanting to make something out of yourself and create something. And then that just gave me the drive at the beginning to keep creating content, and then start to make money from it. The circumstances changed. It became my job. And then here we are now,
Wow.
Yeah,
like
you
12 years later.
this is
know,
this is fascinating to hear, and to hear that he started off by saying that he's a fan of this podcast, which is just what an honor it is to hear you say that. And we had a podcast early on called What's Stopping You, and this is what I mean. I wish we kind of had the foresight to. I would have loved to have had him on as a guest for that podcast, because what I'm hearing here is very reflective of the energy that we were talking about. And it's really about just get started. So when he uses words like shift, or I learned that if I apply myself, the confidence started to rise within him. And he started to realize that all I got to do is look at something that I want to do, and I'm just going to get started and just go. That's what that podcast was huge about. And I don't, X, for the record, I don't think that you had. Like you did this whole thing. I'm not insinuating that anything about that journey was easy, or that it just happened for you, or that all of a sudden you were just like, hey, I'm awesome now. But the fact that you're able to do that shows a certain degree of his character that's not only admirable, but something to be learned from. And now there's a big part of me that's like, boy, what else has he got going on that I don't know about? You know what I mean? So I think we're gonna have some fun diving into that.
Yeah, you definitely. You do a lot. I was just thinking back as you started mentioning some of the things early on in your journey and collaborating with other YouTubers is at least when you first get started, it still is to this day, you know, really important to do as a YouTuber to try to collaborate and basically get more eyes on your content. Helps that way, right? I remember one of the big things that I saw, and then probably the first time I ever saw your content, was when you joined Doc M on his world. I think it was world tour with Doc M, he called it. And he actually used, I think, one of your tutorials. It was like a Animal Farm of some sort. I can't remember. And he let you come on his world, and he would like show you that, hey, look, I built your farm that you did this tutorial on. And I was a big Doc M fan at the time, and I was watching, and I was like, who is this guy? And then I looked, and I was like, whoa, he's got all these great tutorials, and he does a really good job. And they were really high quality. Like, at the time, you're right, like, the people that were just throwing videos up, they come up with a good idea, but they had no idea how to actually format a video and make it like a good presentation. And I saw right away, I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. There's no fluff. He gives you what you came for, and he makes it accessible. You know what I mean? Like, everything you did was like not overwhelming for a new like Minecraft player, Redstoner like myself. Yeah. And immediately I hit the subscribe button. So it was working for you, man, for sure.
Wow, that is so cool to hear that that's how you found me. I did not know that. That moment with Doc M was huge for me, because before I had started making those first videos, like, every day I'd come home and I'd want to watch my Doc M's World Tour video, right? Like, there were three that I watched. It was Static, Efo, and Doc, but Doc's World was just, I loved it. And because obviously I'm watching him, he's trying to make animal breeding contraptions, and he puts out this challenge to the community, and I managed to like solve the problem of creating this animal breeding cell. And that's how we like first connected, through that sort of video to video collaboration. I'll tell you what, man, like, I will always remember it, just like getting home one day, watching his video, and then it's like my name comes up, and he's, oh, Suzuma Voids has found out how to put the animal in the minecart and all this. And it was such a huge moment, because you were like being a part of this new organic thing with this incredible game that was unlike anything anyone had seen before, you know?
Yeah.
So from there, I started to build up a reputation as being the animal breeding guy. I kind of just kept tinkering around with those contraptions, making them better over and over again. They're strangely really redundant now, because they went from being, you know, labyrinths of redstone and minecart tracks to, oh, we can just drop these animals into a one-by-one hole and breed them, you know?
Yeah, things have changed.
That's where they've gone to.
I kind of had a similar path with my channel as well, in that I had a gold farm that was on my channel, a tutorial for a gold farm. And next thing I know, that gold farm ended up in Doc's world. Mm-hmm. And I got the same kind of shout out on it. And that's when I started seeing a rise in subscribers as well. So Doc has been pretty responsible for our channels kind of like getting that boost to kind of get off the ground, I suppose. And that's big, right? Like, that's a big thing for YouTube. Sometimes it's hard to just get past that first like 1,000 subscribers. I remember it just being a long slog to get there.
It's also super different today, because back then all of this that we're talking about was really organic and very much driven by our passion of Minecraft. YouTube has come so far now that it's so much more of a game, and I see less of that organic kind of community stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I really do miss it. It was a special era. For anyone like listening, it's so hard to like take people back to that time and space, but it was it was a really special time to be in this Minecraft scene early on.
Yeah, for sure. I remember, like you mentioned, posting your videos on different forums, you know, like Planet Minecraft and like the Reddit and stuff like that. I was doing the same thing, and I remember I got in trouble. I actually got banned from the Minecraft Reddit because I cross-posted a video that I had done on the Minecraft Reddit with subreddit, like a Redstone or Minecraft Inventions subreddit, and they saw that I cross posted and they got mad. I didn't know it was against the rules. Like, and so
I got banned too at one point. You know, there became a point where too many people were trying to share their videos and they had to sort of shut it down.
Yeah, I got to the point because, like, once you saw, like, oh, this is how I can get some more eyes on my videos, of course you're going to try. And then, you know, nobody reads all the rules of these forums and stuff. And so next thing I know, I get a ban notice. And I think not too long ago, like 2 years ago, I was like, hey, it's been a long time. I learned my lesson. Can I get this ban lifted? And they're like, no. So I'm still to this day banned from the Minecraft Reddit.
Wow. That's amazing. All right. So X, I want to ask you a question. I love asking Minecrafters this question. I love it. And it's not a put you on the spot thing, but you might take a second or two to think about the answer. But I always ask anybody who has really leaned into Minecraft over some portion of their life. I ask them what was your aha moment? And what I mean by that is, I'm sure you've done this too, X, trying to explain what Minecraft is to somebody who doesn't play Minecraft is a very difficult feat. It's just, almost every other game you can think of, it's pretty easy to kind of explain what it is, but Minecraft is so much more than what you're looking at. It's what you're feeling while you're playing it. It's the feeling of an accomplishment or a new idea came to you or whatever. But in order to actually ingrain yourself into what Minecraft is, I believe everybody has sort of an aha moment in regards to being like, oh, that's what this game is. And as an example, my specific aha moment, we've talked about this before on the podcast, was when I saw a powered line of redstone be switched off by another powered line of redstone going into the block that the first line of redstone was on. And in that moment, when I realized that powered was killing another one, that's when I was like, oh, redstone, this is ones and zeros. This is computer language. I saw it on the door that you had made because you followed a tutorial to make a door. And I was like, whoa. And I said, people are going to make computers in this game. And we're seeing it. It's blowing my mind. That was me personally. And I'm not even a redstone guy, but that's me personally. That was my moment of being like, dude, this game is way bigger than I thought it was. This is not just digging up blocks and placing them around in a creative fashion. This is very, very much bigger than I ever could have anticipated. So to you, X, did you have a moment in playing the game when you realized this game's got some very, very real legs?
Yeah, I did. And I love how simple your story is on this. I think mine might be a little simpler because I got the game, right? My mate went, I think you'd like this game called Minecraft. Oh, all right. Went to the Pirate Bay because I had no money back then and got a copy of it. And I think it only took me a few days where I was like, this is amazing, I'm buying it. But I think it must have been like one of my literal first times playing it that the night started to come around and I got killed by a zombie. I didn't even see it. And it was just such a weird experience. It's like, oh, I'm dead now. Anyway, start again. This time though, I'm gonna like dig into a wall and like survive the night by hiding. And so I dig into a wall and I dig out like a square room, like you would. And then I was like, I'll make an upstairs. And I dug a little staircase and then I put an upstairs on it. And then I dug a little window in the side. And that was my eureka moment. That was when I was like, I love this game. This is brilliant. This is genius. And it literally was no decoration. It was just stone and dirt, two rooms in the side of like a hill. And I was hooked from that point on because I just realized this game was all about manipulating the world.
Yes.
Like all of those blocks are for you to shape in the way you want to see them.
Yes.
And I got that so quick early on. And then I discovered redstone and it was like down another rabbit hole. And there was just endless stuff to do in the game. I loved it.
And I don't see that response as being, simpler, if you will, by any stretch. I can see the depth in that response because I'm kind of like the whole time he was telling that story, I was visualizing that moment and the sort of the realization of this is not just removing blocks. I'm shaping what's in front of me. I didn't even know I was inside a bonsai tree and here I am just designing it. What else can this game do? Oh my, you know, I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. God. So you're, would you consider yourself, this is a silly question because I don't know X, you know, before Minecraft, do you consider yourself a gamer? And if so, Can you give us some of the classics, like when you were younger, that sort of your go-tos?
I think I'm more of a creative than a gamer. I think when you're young, everyone loves games, but as you get older, you realize the real game is life. So
yep.
Unless if I get to entertain people by playing a game, that's fantastic for me. Who doesn't want to play a game and have a good time? The fact that I'm doing something bigger than just my own experience with it is lets me play games today. But I absolutely adored loads of them when I were younger. Games like Command and Conquer, the music in that was just hugely influential on me. Let's see, Final Fantasy VII, the storyline in that game was incredible. That game made me cry.
Wow.
When is her name Aerith? When she died, like,
whoa, really spoiler!
I was going to
play that game next week.
Yeah, 30 years later. Yeah, those two pop to mind. But yeah, I never really attached like a strong identity to games. It was music. Like, I was a metalhead. I went to loads of concerts and festivals with my mates. So like, really, I feel like I'm more of a creative in the gaming space, creating stuff. If you look at the games that I've really stuck with and done a lot with, like Factorio, City Skylines, Minecraft, they kind of have this sandboxy element to them where you kind of build up. Maybe not so much Factorio, but, you know, a game like City Skylines is like Minecraft, in which you're like shaping and building the world and bending it to your will, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if a game has like a creative aspect where you can go in and sort of take that vision in your mind and build it, that's the kind of game I'm drawn to.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, creative when it came to the music that you were making, and then just to apply that same kind of creativity to a video game, especially in the sandbox world, it makes a lot of sense that that would translate. Did you see yourself always being in a creative space from a young age? Like, you mentioned that you had kind of like been getting serious about your music before you started making the Minecraft videos. You know, kind of in that age where, you know, teenage years, where you're trying to figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life. Is that where you kind of saw yourself, like, definitely being for the rest of your life, or did you have different plans?
I was a mess in my youth. Like, I was just miserable all over the place, a lack of sort of self-awareness to some extent of, like, you can be something or you can apply yourself. Like, I would just bumble through doing whatever. But when I look back at it, like, it's so clear that I was creative. I used to, like, write tons of poetry. I was always making music, and like when like me and my friends would get together and play games or something, I'd always be the one who'd want to like mix things up and let's try this and let's try that, and that's like the creativity inside of myself trying to get out. But I just never saw it. I never realized what it was until I guess I became a creator on YouTube. Like, then that became a whole life journey of sort of introspection that made me realize, oh, I'm a really like creative person. There's always like this something inside me that sees stuff and wants to like mix it around and put it out in my own way. And obviously Minecraft is absolutely perfect for that, as is music as well.
So when it comes to becoming a full-time content creator and having to explain that decision to your family, did you have those moments where you had to explain to your parents that you were not going back into the whatever kind of corporate job or whatever it is that you had left when you made the decision to go full time? Did you have to have that conversation, and how did they take it?
I did. My parents are really supportive. They didn't understand it, and they still don't understand it to this day.
That's the common answer.
Yeah.
That's the, like, everybody, you know, they don't get it. Yeah.
I've got a house and I'm, you know, doing all right for myself, and I'm independent now, and they can see I'm doing really well, so they have no need to question it. And as I said, like, at the time that I made the transition, things were changing with laws and stuff in this country, and it really like hit my sector in a bad way. Couldn't even make minimum wage anymore, and I was literally just making more from doing the YouTube thing. And so they were like, oh yeah, we'll support you, go for it. And that's it. It's just been that simple ever since, really. They never gave me a hard time or anything for it. Just very supportive.
That's awesome to hear. Yeah, I mean, you know my story. I worked at a corporate job for over 17 years. before I finally decided to pull the trigger. And even then, it was hard to explain to my parents, like, that I was going to do that. You know what I mean? It to me, or to them at least, felt like, oh, you're losing that safety net of a quote unquote real job to do this content creator thing,
yeah,
which is so new to society right now that many people still will refer to that as not a real job, right? Like, we hear that all the time. And
would you consider this a air quotes real job?
It, with as many things that we've had to learn to do from a skill set standpoint, absolutely. And that's actually a good conversation to get into, because as you start off just posting videos to YouTube, you may not realize that soon you're going to have to learn these skills that many people have a quote unquote real job around, whether it be Photoshop, you know, making digital art, whether, you know, for thumbnails, right? Whether it be audio mixing to make sure your sound is good. We have to learn all about AV equipment, right? Like picking up microphones and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and
you're talking about a trade, right? You're just talking about having a trade, a skill set. Mm-hmm. But the question is, I think the first thing to do is to ask, to define what does real job, what's a job? And my definition is a little bit weird in regards to, I actually right now, you know, I've been with Intel for 18 years. I don't consider myself as having a job there. I don't have a job. I have a career, right? I have an actual path. I have a journey within that set of skills where I've created this sort of aura of who I am there, and that's my career. Or you can have a job, which is just basically your on the job training is about 2 hours long, and now you have a job or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in regards to what you guys do here, I see this world as less of a real job and more of a real career. Because you're creating entity, you're creating identity, you're creating these things, mm-hmm. you're creating legacy, you're doing all those things. I think that in terms of some people think, if it doesn't suck or it's not hard, it's not a real job. That's not true. One thing is for sure, there's plenty about this world that sucks. There's plenty about this world that's difficult. And it's people, unless you give it a go, you're not going to be able to understand it. It's why our parents don't get it.
Yeah.
You know,
let me ask you this, X, because you are a creative and, you know, not everything about what we do in creating content is creative, right? There's a lot of technical stuff to it. There's a lot of other things that require, you know, a lot of more corporate-y type disciplines, meetings and sponsorships and doing all that kind of stuff. Did you find it difficult when you started to dive into those areas of content creation coming from a more creative background? Or did you, I mean, how was your journey with that?
That's a fascinating question. I think it just goes in line with the sort of stride of personal growth, like having to sort of put yourself out there to some extent. You know, obviously for me, that's just putting my voice in the video. And then eventually doing stuff like being live while doing that, which is like another level. You put yourself into uncomfortable spaces and then you kind of grow into them as you get used to them. And I think that's what's happened with that sort of stuff. Because if I roll back the clock 10 years, the idea, okay, of this right now would probably frighten the hell out of me, as would, you know, being in a group and, you know, running meetings and, you know, there's all sorts of people I talk to now about various opportunities and stuff and collaborate with. And you know, those communication skills have developed with it over time. So back then, like, it really wasn't in my scope. It's just all sort of happened. And there's been all these like opportunities and doors that you got to step through. And, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable because you're coming from a place of like, not really having that, you know, so that you grow into it, I guess, is my answer. Had to grow into all of that.
Yeah, some of the opportunities were just kind of thrust upon you. If we go back and take a look at the history of Hermitcraft, you know, there was a time where its founder, Generic B, had decided to basically leave Hermitcraft to go to Mindcrack. And basically, if you had not kind of stepped in and picked it up, it could have died, right? And so in that way, you were kind of thrust into a leadership. I hate using that word because I know that that's not exactly what you wanted it to be called?
Stewardship.
Stewardship.
Stewardship. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were kind of thrust like, into this and it had to take the reins basically in order to make sure Hermitcraft could stay a thing. Tell us about what that did for you, like from a stress level and from a learning level.
Yeah, that was really uncomfortable because, you know, again, I'll keep mentioning how much all of this sort of ties in with growth as a person, but who I was back then, the idea of leading a group of people was something I did not want to do at all. Like, it just wasn't me, right? Like, I didn't think of myself as a leader, but here I was a part of Hermitcraft. I was so stoked and enthusiastic to have joined that in the beginning. And I had such an amazing time across that first season. And then season two, again, just having a great time with everyone, but it really started to crumble. There were a lot of people coming and going. There wasn't any leadership. It was all a little bit chaotic and activity could die down. And it really felt to me like if this ship isn't guided, it's just going to crash and fall apart. And I felt so bad about it to the point where I just, you know, I didn't want to walk away from it or anything. So I just thought, right, I'm going to have to give this a try. And I remember just feeling incredibly nervous about bringing everyone together to say, look, can I lead this thing forward? You know, because we need leadership. If like some direction is better than no direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, everyone embraced me. And, you know, I don't know. I can't say for certain that if I hadn't have done that, Hermitcraft might not be here today. It might have found its way here still. There's a lot of talented people in this group doing amazing things together. But it did feel like a turning point. It felt like after that, you know, we became a much steadier group with some sort of direction for our future.
Well, I'll tell you, my perspective on that is, you know, SMPs come and go every day, right? There's always this idea of people that, let's get a group of people together and it lasts for a week or two and then it falls apart. It sounds like from a statistical standpoint, X, it sounds like, because you're right, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what would have happened if you did not step up to the plate, but you chose to get uncomfortable. You chose to go do something that everything about your being was saying, I don't want to do this, but your mind and your heart were like, said, you know what, that's just too bad. This is what this group needs. And from a statistical standpoint, I believe if you did not step up and do that, we're not having this conversation right now. Hermitcraft is something that nobody even knows was ever a thing, if mm-hmm. for only a blink of an eye. And again, to kind of get in X's corner, we don't know. I could be wrong here, but just because of the human nature and that it's very, very, it's hard for a group of people to come together and just be successful when there's no real proper guidance, there's no infrastructure to it. And when you were recognizing a sinking ship and you got busy, you got busy and you made it into an unstoppable one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's extremely commendable. So again, you might be right. Maybe somebody would have picked up the reins, but from a probability standpoint, maybe not. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Whew, that's interesting.
Those are very kind words and I appreciate them immensely. I always find it really difficult to just accept when people are saying nice things, you know, my mind starts to think of reasons why it might not be, but whatever the reason is, I'm so glad that Hermitcraft is, you know, still around today because we have just such amazing times and we've reached so many people as well. I mean, back then when I made that decision, you know, and wanted to keep things going, I had absolutely no idea it'd reach some of the heights it has today, right? Like, things over the last few years have just been incredible to be a part of.
Yeah, and it was definitely fantastic to be able to, like, help people through the pandemic. Like, that one, that was a big one for me. And I don't know if you remember, X, but we had a meeting that happened right after, like, basically everybody's like lockdowns were happening. Right. And we kind of started talking as a group about what that meant to our viewers. And we realized that they were going to be looking for an escape. They were going to be looking for a vibe that they needed to feel happiness, be entertained, be taken away from their current situation because it was a real downer, right? The pandemic was a real downer. You couldn't do what you wanted to do. You couldn't see your friends outside and anymore and all that kind of stuff. So we knew that they'd be kind of turning towards content online. And we felt like a big opportunity to give that to them in droves. Like we decided as a group that we wanted to make as much content together and be and show like a happy vibe to our audience. And I remember you being very passionate in those conversations and just the way that you cared about your audience and their mental well-being was something that I'll never forget. Like that's when that was like my first Azuma is a genuinely great human being kind of aha moment. And so, yeah, I know you don't always enjoy getting the kind words.
I find it so hard, man. I appreciate it. I almost don't know what to say.
I remember
that meeting.
Yeah, yeah. So do I, like vividly. And that was for me, that, like I said, the moment then I really understood who you were. Because a lot of times when we get together and we talk, it's just like business. You know what I mean? It's like, what project are we going to work on together? And this was like human nature stuff, like who we are as people. And that's when I was like, this is a good deal.
Well, yeah, the situation put us in a novel place where all of a sudden the main motive wasn't content. Well, it was weird because the answer was more content. But like, you know, it was like this thing's happening in the world. We're in a space where we can help people. And like, let's go for this, you know, let's help people through this.
Well, the pandemic put the whole lot of you into a space of breaking down, forcing down that fourth wall, right? Everything had been content that you made together and then you posted, how did it do? Okay, on to the next one. But then it got to a point to where you guys were like, okay, the world just flipped upside down. Everybody is going to be seeing what they can do in regards to doing their part. Where do we play in this space? And you guys were able to kind of reach a new level of humanity in the content creation world that's worth addressing. It's worth acknowledging. And that it feels like that vibe, that energy's just continued and continues to continue. I mean, I go to what Scar did with the, you know, leading the effort for the, and I know it was a lot of people involved, but Scar was the tip of the sword and leading the effort in the go-kart thing. And that's a huge thing. So in all of this, actually, I'm actually enjoying making X uncomfortable. All of this goes back to X saving the ship.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, really think about that. Like this is a very big deal. I might be leaning a little bit too much into making him uncomfortable because I'm enjoying this moment, but I feel also justified in doing it because I'm not BSing anything. Right. I feel confident that my assessment of that situation is very, very accurate. And look at where it went. And what's more is just try to imagine where it's going. You know, it's just if with the right leadership, with the right attention, this Hermitcraft ship can keep going for you guys. It can keep flying. It can keep doing its thing. And I'm excited to see what the future holds because the past up until now, the Hermitcraft train has been so very promising.
Yeah.
You know,
let's talk about that, X. I'll run something by you here and get your thoughts on it. So you mentioned 12 years, right? You've been doing this plus probably.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on season 9 of Hermitcraft right now. Every season has been different and unique in its own ways. Do you feel like we can continue to have new ideas, impressive ideas that are going to reinvigorate the audience over and over again? Or do you feel like maybe we've starting to get down to the bottom of the barrel? Where do you feel after 12 years of doing this?
You know, it's one of those ones where I think so much like this, as you'll know, but like the whole crystal ball thing, where it's like we could feel like we've gotten to the bottom of that barrel, but keep going, and it's just what people want. Or it could be the flip of that. You feel like, you know, there's more that we can do, but people just don't buy into it, right? I think the core of what we do is maybe a little bit more about us these days than it is about the Minecraft game. And as I think in Skiz, you pointed out just a moment ago, like the pandemic transformed us as a group as well. I think we were more Minecrafters, and post we're more of a community now with our audience. There's a stronger connection between ourselves and with them as well. And so I think people are watching maybe more for us and what we do together. So I think as long as we find ways to have fun together, I really think that's what will make future seasons of Hermitcraft, you know, a air quotes success or not, is that we have to really enjoy whatever the ideas we pursue are.
I absolutely agree. I mean, after all this time, there's only so many ways you can make a carrot farm, right? Like, we can't just, and I love farming. Like, farming's been my passion in Minecraft since the very beginning. But at this point, it's like, unless I can bring some sort of like wild new idea that's never been thought of to farming, then it's just a matter of placing blocks all over again, like I did the season before. You know, it doesn't, there's not a lot of passion behind it. But where the passion comes from is in some of the stories that we can tell, some of the journeys we can go on together and bring our audience with us. You know, it's like crazy concepts that have arisen, like when we did the Empires crossover. Like that was maybe the first time in history, at least that I know of, at least big SMPs have come together and intermingled the way that that came about. We actually had some questions about that from our Glimpse supporters, about what your take was on that Empires crossover. What did you feel? How did you feel about it when the concept came up in the meeting to the point that we were actually collaborating with other members from another server? And what was your take on that whole journey?
Yeah, I loved it from like the inception when it was first pitched. I was on board of it. I thought it was a great idea. And I also kind of knew it wasn't going to be entirely for me. The crossover with Empires, them as a group, they're much more roleplay oriented. They come onto the server as characters. And that is something I struggle with. But I was willing to go for it because, again, that thing about just like stepping into uncomfortable spaces, you come out feeling better once you've given it a go. I'm not going to look back at it and be like, oh, my role playing was so great as a pirate or anything. Right. But it was a fun experience. We had laughs. People were entertained. And I did something that, you know, is not normally the kind of thing that I'm known for. So from my own little perspective in that way, it was a good thing for me to do. But from the audience's perspective of everything that was going on, it was just one big wild ride. There were so many crazy moments. The storyline just led to incredible Minecraft builds, fun jokes, storylines, pranks, shenanigans. Like it was really like, I think, an elevation of anything anyone had maybe seen before, you know? Yeah, it was a very unique event.
It was a natural collaboration with like-minded content creators, you know?
Yes.
So that was real easy to, it's always fun to explore new things and meet new people.
Yeah.
You know? And like I said, yeah, we were a bit out of our comfort zone, but we were trying something new, and that's
exactly
what it's all about.
Exactly. And that the thing is, it's my opinion, I think comfort is likely the biggest enemy to progress, right? When it comes to evolving, when it comes to growing, comfort is the biggest enemy that you have. And when I think about some of the biggest growing I've done in my life, I think about those moments and I'm like, those were some of the most miserable moments of my life. But it was because it was so uncomfortable to go do what I needed to do. That's when I grew. That's when I got better. That's when I became kind of like iconic in my own little way with the drum and stuff and all that. Right. So I think about this and all of these stories, it's adding to that notion, to that disposition that comfort really is the biggest enemy to growth. And it makes me, let me see, I'm just going to dive right into it. I want to kind of take this and segue into the privacy aspect, because this is one of, I think X's most interesting things about him is the privacy. And I can totally dig it, and I 100% understand it. And I think, I'd like to get his take on that. But before we do that, because I don't necessarily think it's a comfort thing. I think it's just a smart thing, right? I think he's just very smart. I go back to 2016 MineCon, and there was the Hermitcraft panel, and I was recording it on my phone, and there was a lot of people watching it live because Ren took that feed from my phone and put it. That was actually my first introduction to Ren. And you guys brought a box that had X's, Minecraft skin on it. And you guys would like shake it as he talked and everything. And I remember in that moment being like, this is very interesting to me, because I would love to have this kind of notoriety that X has. I would love it. And he is willingly avoiding it to the point to where they're putting up a cardboard box that has his Minecraft face on it and just shaking it as he talks. I'm interested. I'm very in. Who is that? What is this? What am I dealing with here? And I thought it was fascinating. So without asking you to divulge too much, I'd like to hear your take on the whole privacy thing, because I'm going to be honest, I envy it. Right. I actually do. I envy how private you've managed to stay. There's a lot of people that know my name, and a lot of it's to my own reckless behavior. But also my face, it sort of is my product. I'm super goofy, you know, and I make a lot of.
He's just setting up the next big face reveal, you know, like you thought Dream's face reveal was big. Azuma's is going to be even bigger.
He's not going to do it.
I'm fairly certain nothing will ever shift. I don't think there'll ever be a face reveal. Yeah. I am very happy with what I've chosen to do here.
Yes.
It was initially incidental, but I think it's just an extension of who I am in a way. Like, I am a quieter, shyer sort of person. I keep to myself. And coming online, I didn't feel like I want to put my face in a video. I didn't feel like I wanted to even talk in the first ones, right? But then the channel started to grow. People leave comments. You're talking to other people, friends on YouTube behind the scenes anyway, so eventually you start doing that. But yeah, I just never felt like I wanted to put my face in it. And I do come from like an age of the internet where people went online with different personas, right? Did I say this earlier, or was it when we were talking off camera that sort of MySpace era was when people started to shift to use their online names, like the actual, sorry, real names online. Right. Mm-hmm. But before that, everything was always aliases. And so you kind of talked to people who had names that would sort of hint at their interests and stuff. Mm. And that was just how we went online. And I just kind of stuck to that and came into this space accidentally not using my real name and generally being cautious about that kind of stuff. And then when you start to get pressured by your audience to put your face in when you're like, not really gunning to do that, it just immediately sort of made me more aware of the privacy aspect of all of this.
Yes.
And I realized how much I valued it and decided, no, I'm not going to put my face in. And yeah, like I said a moment ago, to this day, I still know I'm not going to do it. I have no desire to just, you know, hey, look at me or anything, right? Like, I'm fine with it just being the voice. It works.
Do you ever have paranoia when you're like out and about, maybe doing some grocery shopping or whatever, that somebody's going to hear you talking to a cashier or something and be like, you sound like this YouTuber Azuma guy?
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, have you ever get a little nervous that's going to happen, or has it happened?
Not these days. In the past, it might have like rattled me a little bit. But I've met a few people who like know me first through, you know, video and stuff, and then I meet them later on or whatever, and it's fine. I just, if it happens, it will happen, and I'll just deal with it. And I'm probably sure it'll be one of those things where, like, if you think about it in advance, you make it a big deal, and what will probably happen is you'll just meet another human being and it'll all be cool. So I don't really worry about it.
Yeah, most people are like, we discussed this a little bit before we hit record. We just were kind of spitballing a little bit with each other. And we talked about the privacy thing, and that privacy, we actually covered this in the technology or what's in the future podcast, mm-hmm. That where I was talking about privacy is going to become more and more of a commodity, to where there will be literal clubs that take you off the grid entirely. And, you know, your cell phone's not going to work. Like, this is what I'm predicting for the future, because privacy is going to be such a thing of the past. And we're witnessing that transition to the point to where being famous, if you will, 40, 50 years ago, you could use your name, you could use your face, you could do all that, because not everybody had what's equivalent to what the FBI has, mm-hmm. in their home office the way we do.
Right.
We have more power in our cell phone than the FBI had 50 years ago. Like, and this is just because of the infrastructure that has now consumed the world, that privacy is so very hard to come by, you know. And before I even ever use the word, you know, Intel or whatever, people just deduced it, and I ended up getting an email from somebody at one of our branches and in a completely different state saying, are you Skiz? I'm like, how did that happen? You know,
yeah.
And most people, and I mean 99.9999% of people, are going to be just fine. And this person was perfectly pleasant. And they kind of got the vibe that I wanted to keep it quiet. And they said, oh, gotcha. I just want to let you know I'm a fan. I appreciate what you do. And it meant the world to me. And they never reached out again. And I'm like, that's to the point I want to reach out to them and be like, okay, you're good. I like you a lot. Like you didn't, you reached out once, you felt the discomfort and you stepped away. I appreciate that, you know? And so I like I said, I admire what X has pulled off. And there's a big part of me that covets it very, very much. You know, but again, I'm nothing without my goofy face.
At this point, my only regret about showing my face is that people over the past 10 years have watched me age. You know what I mean? Fair, yeah. So now it's very obvious when they go to my stream that I'm just an old man playing Minecraft, you know?
Well, no, that's a good, I was talking to my wife about this podcast with X coming up. And I want to point out one thing before I go into this small story with my wife, that this whole thing of, you know, now we're going to have a remote guest that is not willing to show their face. I think most people would think that this would be a pain. It wasn't for me or you, Impulse. It was another awesome, fun challenge on how are we going to pull this off? This is going to be neat. It was another way to spice up the podcast, you know? And I was telling my wife and she's like, why doesn't he want to show his face? I'm like, well, that's just his thing. And I said, and to be honest, because he's smart, because one thing that he has that I don't have now and I'll never get and Impulse will never get is that he's timeless. He's absolutely timeless. When you don't show your face ever, you become timeless. I'm not going to ask you how old you are. I don't care. But he could literally be 18 to 60. I wouldn't know the difference. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I'm 18.
Yeah. 18 forever.
You got it.
Yeah.
You started young.
I mean, my gray hairs are 18.
I'm thinking right now. So we've been doing a lot of talking mainly about the content creator side of things with Azuma. And if we can now shift gears and maybe start talking about some of the other things, because Azuma is multifaceted.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I think, how many channels do you have on YouTube? Like 4 or 5 or something like that, right?
It got up to 5. I would say that it's just 3 and Twitch at the moment is what I would say.
So you do a lot of things. You have a lot of hobbies that I definitely want to pick your brain on, because I admire a lot of what you do in those spaces. So how about we do this? And I know our listeners hate it because it means they have to wait another week.
And I love it.
I know what's coming. Yeah. Shall I make this easy? There'll be a part 2.
There you go.
Part 2.
Azuma's going to stick around part 2. We're going to learn more about Azuma, the man that's actually behind the camera, not what you see on camera as much.
Yeah.
And everything that he does.
Don't see me at all on camera.
True. Yeah. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, let's take a break for this week and then we'll get back to talking more about you and your hobbies and a lot of like who you are, what you're about in the next episode. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, we'll see you in a bit.